Chapter 9.
"This is a terrible thing," he said the moment we got out into the street. I realized that he had come away with me in order to discuss once more what he'd been already discussing for hours with his sister-in-law. "We don't know who the woman is, you know," he said. "All we know is the baggage's gone to Paris."
I thought they got on so well.
So they did. Why, just before you came in, Amy said they'd never had a quarrel in the whole of their married life. You know Amy. There never was a better woman in the world. Since these confidences were thrust on me, I saw no harm in asking a few questions.
But do you mean to say she suspected nothing?
Nothing. He spent August with her and the children in Norfolk. He was just the same as he'd always been. We went down for 2 or 3 days, my wife and I. I played golf with him. He came back to town in September to let his partner go away, and Amy stayed on in the country. They'd taken a house for 6 weeks, and at the end of her tenancy, she wrote to tell him on which day she was arriving in London. He answered from Paris. He said he'd made up his mind not to live with her any more.
What explanation did he give?
My dear fellow, he gave no explanation. I've seen the letter. It wasn't more than 10 lines, but that's extraordinary.
We happened then to cross the street, and the traffic prevented us from speaking. What Colonel MacAndrew had told me seemed very improbable, and I suspected that Mrs. Strickland, for reasons of her own, had concealed from him some part of the facts. It was clear that a man after 17 years of wedlock did not leave his wife without certain occurrences which must have led her to suspect that all was not well with their married life. The Colonel caught me up.
"'Cause there was no explanation he could give except that he'd gone off with a woman. I suppose he thought she could find that out for herself. That's the sort of chap he was.
What is Mrs. Strickland going to do?"
"Well, the first thing is to get our proofs. I'm going over to Paris myself."
"But what about his business?"
"That's where he's been so artful. He's been drawing in his horns for the last year."
"Did he tell his partner he was leaving?"
"Not a word."
Colonel MacAndrew had a very sketchy knowledge of business matters, and I had none at all, so I did not quite understand under what conditions Strickland had left his affairs. I gathered that the deserted partner was very angry and threatened proceedings. It appeared that when everything was settled, he would be £400 or £500 out of pocket.
"It's lucky the furniture in the flat is in Amy's name. She'll have that, at all events."
"Did you mean it when you said she wouldn't have a bob?"
"Of course I did. She's got £200 or £300 in the furniture."
"How's she going to live?"
"God knows."
The affair seemed to grow more complicated, and the Colonel, with his expletives and his indignation, confused rather than informed me. I was glad that, catching sight of the clock at the Army and Navy stores, he remembered an engagement to play cards at his club, and so left me to cut across St. James's Park.